Today's episode is brought to you by the Local Palette Cookbook Club. What do you do if your mom is an amazing cook and people keep asking her to write a cookbook? Welcome to Everything Cookbooks, the podcast for writers, readers, and cooks. I'm Molly Stevens, and today I am here with my co-host, Kate Leahy. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Molly.
People often approach you, they approach me, and they're like, I have this cookbook idea, my family's recipes, my mom is an amazing cook, right? What's your usual response?
Oh, I mean, I guess I will default to it depends.
Right.
But it depends. So a lot of times, maybe somebody has a great collection of recipes and they're a good home cook, but if they've only ever made those recipes for their family and they've never gotten outside of their sort of home and cooked for a larger community, it's really hard to say, like, who's going to care about these recipes?
Right.
The person behind the recipes these days is so important. It's not just words on a page.
Right. I always feel a little like heartless being like, who cares about your mom's recipes? But I mean, in today's marketplace, it just typically is not going to be the thing that a publisher is looking for. I mean, we talk about platform too. It's, you know, who's your mom, right?
Yeah, your mom's Martha Stewart. It's kind of like, well,
that's a different take.
That's a different thing.
Well, it's really interesting. And I mean, I ask because today's episode, we are talking to a mother-son duo that wrote a book together, and he saw it as just a collection of his mom's recipe and really wasn't on board at first.
Right.
And then things turned around a little bit.
Sounds in this case that the mom really had all these recipes that were beloved. She wanted to turn them into a book, and her son, he'd already sort of edited some of these recipes. Like, you can help me. Oh, yeah, I can help you. But am I really going to have to do this?
Email them to me. Yeah.
It's a story of tenacity.
And vision. I mean, real vision, too. We are talking to the authors of a new book, came out this fall, called Heartland Masala, an Indian cookbook from an American kitchen. The authors are Jyoti and Oyin Mukherjee.
This conversation is so fun because there is such this great dynamic. We've never had a mother and son on the podcast before. And in this book, in the pages, you really get this dialogue between them. So we're going to get into how they wrote the book, why the book exists, the hoops they had to jump through, the creative control they maintained. But also they just have an interesting backstory.
Yeah.
15 years ago, I don't think either of them thought that they would be on a book tour.
No, Jyoti is a chef, a teacher. She's a retired physician. She immigrated to the U.S. from India in the late 70s. And she's been teaching weekly cooking classes in her home kitchen near Kansas City for about 15 years and has had thousands and thousands of students come through. And it's the students that clamoring for her recipes, really.
And her son, Oyin, is a musician. He's not one of us, you know, who's been writing cookbooks for the past decade. He's a touring musician who's part of the indie folk band Darling Side. So he's plenty busy on his own.
Right.
But he's also this really thoughtful writer. In this book, it's filled with layers of culinary history. And so it's kind of interesting that he's used to being on tour as part of a band. And now he and his mom have been on tour this fall.
On book tour
promoting
together.
His book. Yeah. So they're like a different type of band. It's really cute.
Yeah. Well, let's bring them on and find out all about it. Well, Jyoti and Oyin, welcome to Everything Cookbooks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor to be here.
We are so excited to talk to you, and we've just been poring over this book, Heartland Masala, and there's just so much to talk about. So I guess this is a question for Jyoti to start. When did you decide you wanted to write a cookbook? As a teacher, you're teaching your classes in your home. Were your students asking for recipes? Where did this idea come from?
I have been teaching for about 15 years in my home kitchen. And 2-3 years into the teaching is when my students, they said, you know, we would love for you to write a book, but we have a requirement. And that requirement is that we would like you to have a photograph with every recipe. And so they were the ones who instilled the idea in me. It was not something that I dreamt about. They have always been my motivators and kind of always kept me on track. And Oyin had been doing a little bit of ghostwriting for me because, you know, I was approached by certain magazines, by the newspaper, some of them write to write themselves, and some of them wanted me to send an article to them. So I would have Oyen do some ghostwriting for me, so that when this idea of the book came up, I asked Oyen if he would help me write the book. And at that time, he was brave enough to say yes. I love to teach, I love to talk, but I do not like to write.
Ah.
And so the hardest thing for me when I started my teaching classes, and I do need you to know, I've never been to culinary school. I'm a mom with a passion to cook and a little girl who loved to teach. And one day by fluke, those two passions just came together because of an auction that I had, item that I had donated to a local charity here in the city. It just led me to this path where here I am 15 years later, meeting all you wonderful people that I would never have ever gotten a chance had I practiced medicine.
Ah, amazing. When you're teaching, are you handing out a recipe or are you just teaching?
I hand out recipes, and that's the hardest thing for me to do is write those recipes because, you know, I'm used to, like all moms, most moms, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And so writing a recipe was the hardest for me. Now it's not. But at that time when I started, it was tough to write the recipe. And the boys, of course, have helped me big time. Our youngest son, who is my technical support, he is the one who helps me with all my typing, all my recipes. And they are pretty hard on me. They will say things like, okay, can you give a definition of the recipe? And so when I come out with the definition, no, you can do better. No, no, that's not right. You can do better than that. They will never come up with a suggestion, but they keep on goading me. And finally, I think I do come up with something that is pleasing to their ears and pleasing to write. So it is written and we go from there. Oyen is a taskmaster in a different way. He is constantly encouraging me to come up with better wordings, better sentences, better ways of defining a recipe.
Right. Well, everyone needs an editor. I wanted just to get the timeline for this project. Jyoti, when you know, you're getting requests for recipes with photos, what year was this when you thought, oh, maybe a cookbook is something I should consider?
Probably about 2013.
Wow.
Or 2014, around that time.
Right. And so you have this idea, you have this collection of recipes, you have demand for your recipes. It's like, oh, the next obvious step is a cookbook. But right now we're in 2025. So a lot had to happen from then till now. Oyen, I want to get a little bit of your perspective. When did you kind of feel like this could be a real printed book on the shelves at cookbook stores all over?
So my mom, I think, probably did float the idea to me in the early 20-teens. And I said yes, bluffing, because I didn't actually want to do this project with her, or it wasn't within the scope of things. At that point, my day job is playing music, and I was quite busy on the road touring. So the prospect of coming home and recipe testing between touring stints was not that appealing. But I did say yes, just to sort of end the conversation, because I basically, saying yes put the ball back in her court, because she had to send me a bunch of recipes to start looking at. And I didn't think she would get around to that. So it was effectively hitting a pause button. But when I look back through my emails, I see that I did end up testing some recipes in 2017. So sometime between 2013, 2014, and 2017, my mom did send me the recipes and I started testing things. Even then, I think there was a sense of, oh, we're starting this huge project. And I had no experience writing cookbooks, of course, but have a lot of experience with large creative projects with my band, and knew that it was going to be a very, very long road. So even when I was starting to test, it was sort of like, all right, these aren't working out so well. This seems like a terrible idea. This, like, I think my first report back to my mom, she had sent over 100 recipes, and the recipes she gives out to her classes, they're sort of between outlines and recipes where they have all the ingredients, most of the steps, not tested, and they're not meant to be used as a recipe. It's more like something for people in her classes to follow along.
And to take notes on as they're listening
to
her.
Yeah, and adjust and, you know, that kind of thing. So I tested those as though they were recipes. I'd say I was about 30% successful. Came back to my mom and said, look, these didn't quite work out the way that I would have wanted, they need a lot of work. And my mother, there was a whole conversation there, but the upshot was maybe I'm the problem and I don't know how to cook, which that I think pattern persisted throughout our recipe testing process. We both know how to get under each other's skin quite well and did so successfully many, many, many times, as I think any parent-child combination might do. But 2017, 2018, it became clear this was happening. And my mother's vision for it was a pretty slapdash thing, like take these recipes that in her mind are pretty much done, spiral bind them, maybe take some poor to mediocre iPhone photos that aren't entirely in focus and put those in with each recipe. And we got a cookbook, sell those at the classes. That'll take a year, nothing official. It became clear to me that even if we did that, it would take me a while to feel good about a product of any sort. So in thinking about that, I started thinking, look, this is going to take time regardless. And I the frog in boiling water situation where I'm too deep in to now get out. I'm writing this cookbook with my mom. What is going to sustain my interest? Because the prospect of writing yet another Indian cookbook from an upper middle class family in the US or UK with a bunch of family recipes was not at all appealing. That's a lovely genre. There are many excellent books already in it. The idea of adding another one had no appeal for me. So in thinking about what we could do that would sustain my interest, I started talking to a lot of friends, reading a lot of writing about cookbooks, landed on history and context as a thing that I thought would be a lot of fun to add. There are certainly cookbooks that dive deep into history and context, but often at the risk of being a little more encyclopedic and not as accessible. And accessibility was a thing that was important for this book, just in keeping in the spirit of my mom's classes. So yeah, figuring out a way to incorporate some of those threads and opinions that I think I had started to get as a result of reading other cookbooks and reading more about cookbook writing and cooking literature in general. And so that felt like a great path for me. But the only problem was that I had no experience with Indian culinary history outside of sort of occasionally looking things up on Wikipedia. So that began an independent course of study for the next several years, during which my mother occasionally threatened her own death. She was expecting things within a year or two. So when it was 4 or 5 years in and I was just like knee deep in books telling her I'm busy with my research, she was just like, I might die before this thing comes out. She was and is in good health, to be clear, but was presenting as though we were at risk of not making it. So that did also speed the process along a bit, I think. It was a pretty gradual process until it just became clear that we were in it and doing it, and I needed to figure out a way to sustain my interest through it. And that was where, like, I think some of the shape of the book came in.
Well, it's so interesting. It's very much a collaboration.
Very.
So, Jyoti, you had to be patient. Because you at the beginning said you wouldn't have done it by yourself. You didn't want to write it. You don't like writing. So you needed a collaborator. And your collaborator comes back and says, first of all, says, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then gets involved and says, no, this is much bigger than what you want to do. I don't think I've ever really heard that story before for two people who so successfully collaborated, even though you've had some
friction from the start, I'd say.
It was good friction. It was out of love. Oyen may deny it at this time, but I think it was truly familial love at its best.
Yeah. And that comes through, and we'll get to the content of the book. And there, Kate and I, when we were talking about this book before and going through it together, there is so much love in this book and so much reverence, Oyen, that you have for your mother and for her cooking capacity. And there's a lot of humor in it too, but it's very clear that you respect the recipes and her skill and, you know, her ability, like the diagram of rolling out the breads and just, you know, her complete, you know, comfort and expertise doing it and your, you know, performance anxiety around it. It really comes across. But we decide to make this a bigger book, a book that's going to be history, bigger than just a pamphlet of recipes. So that means it's not just going to be spiral bound and not just going to be run off at the local Kinko's. So how do you then get to a publisher?
In constructing this, I should also say, like, my mom did have a lot of patience, but she also allowed me all the latitude I wanted. That was kind of part of the deal too, if I'm going to do this with her. So she did sign off on everything, but the artistic vision, she allowed me to sort of run with that from the start. It took much longer than she anticipated, but I don't think that part of it was a surprise. My mom, am I correct there that like from the beginning, it was like I was going to get to make it the way I wanted to, assuming it had all the recipes in it. Was that your understanding of it too?
Yes.
So it just took, you know, 8 times as long as she was expecting. But as far as the publisher part, in my mind's eye, when I was thinking about adding this element to it of history and cultural context, I was very excited about it joining all of the other books that I so admire on bookshelves and in bookshops across the country. And the route that I understood that to take was getting an agent and then finding a publisher. But I also had a pretty firm understanding of what it was I wanted to make. So I was moving full steam ahead with the vision and like doing the thing the way I wanted to do it. Spoke to some friends who work in the publishing world and eventually had a conversation with a couple of agents, one of whom, Sally Eckes, who's I adore. She's wonderful. Sally didn't say it in these words, but basically said that the vision for the book was too kinky for traditional publishing. There's just like a lot of stuff going on. Things would need to get compromised in order for a traditional publisher who are, these are folks who are, at least in my understanding, generally a risk-averse crowd, to describe like our book, which is like, all right, my mom and I are going to be illustrated characters. There's also going to be a bunch of photos. We're going to get into some history. It might get a little political. Also, there's a unicorn flying on a fruit rainbow. That's all of this stuff. Like there's just a lot of, it's a lot of things that if you don't have it in your head, may not hang together. And when Sally told us that there would need to be some compromise, I said, great. I don't think we're going to compromise it. I'm fine with the possibility. And again, this draws back to some of my experience making music. My band, Darling Side, we are fiercely protective of our artistic inclinations and what we want to make, and have been offered major label deals that we have turned down because to retain control of our art was the most important thing. So it's not that we're against marketing it, but we will make the thing that we want to make exactly. And then we will sell it the way we need to sell it with advice from folks. But we try to keep the selling very much separated from the making of the art, which, and granted, we're not Coldplay, so maybe that's a thing we should switch and we'd be more popular. but it's, at least for personally, it's been extremely rewarding. We're all very pleased with that process and how it's gone, and to have had agency in making the art we want to make. So that was the attitude I was bringing to this project, which is, if we need to compromise for a publisher, that's good to know. We're not going to do that in at least the ways that seemed like they would be necessary. So I started on a path of assuming we'd be self-publishing, which is how we ended up finding our illustrator and photographer. And I was also running our recipe testing.
So this is all happening before you figured out a way that you were going to print and distribute the book.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, I'd done some research into how much it would cost for us to, and so I'm very fortunate my parents were willing to take on the risk for this project. And I'd done some research into what it would cost. And it's not dissimilar from what an album would cost in terms there's a huge range of things where you can make a cookbook for $15,000. You can make a cookbook for $150,000. The same thing with albums, of course. But in terms of like large scale creative processes, having some fluency in that was very helpful with cookbook construction. So yeah, I was moving ahead. I had reached out to some designers, Frances Baca. She's one of the designers I reached out to. We didn't end up working with her on the book, but she ended up sending over work by Olivia Kugler, who's our illustrator. And turns out his stuff is incredible. And he entertained our offer, which I'm psyched about. But he is a lovely, lovely man. And if this book does well, one of my hopes is that his work is, or that's sort of a boon for his work, because his stuff is spectacular. He's a lovely collaborator too.
So, but you did not end up really self-publishing. You ended up with the Collective Book Studio, which is a hybrid model, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you find them?
That was Sally, who connected us with a few different hybrid models. It was kind of fun to have any interest from a publisher of any kind after being told that like this is going to be a hard sell. Yeah, Angela and Collective seemed like the best option, and we have been thrilled with how things have gone with them. So one of the main reasons we wanted to do this, I wasn't opposed to finding everything a la carte, but the self-publishing part of the hybrid model is that you take on all the risk as the author. You're paying for all the pre-publishing work, all of the printing, and so you're taking on all that risk. The standard side of the hybrid model is that it's a fully stacked company. So they have editors, art, and copy. They have an indexer. They promote your stuff to booksellers. The key part for us with that initially when we were judging it was that they also had distribution through Simon & Schuster.
Right.
That was going to be a piece that if we self-published, it's very hard to find distribution. In the music world, you can hire distribution a la carte.
Interesting.
I was told that wasn't really an option. So from a bookseller perspective, as far as I understand, if we're distributed by Simon & Schuster, we seem as legit as anyone else, even though we got there via a very different model.
Yeah, if you see it on a shelf next to, you know, one of the top five, you would have no idea that it's coming from a hybrid. So
totally.
So Amy Treadwell is your editor.
Uh-huh, yeah.
From what I understand, you still have to sort of pitch yourself to Collective Book Studio to see if they see it as a viable cookbook. Now, is that something you had to do? You had to pitch yourself, and Amy Treadwell was like, oh, I see potential here. So it's almost kind of like you still had to jump through a hoop?
Yes, the hoop had already been jumped through. In starting to pitch to the agents back in the sort of the prior iteration, I had enlisted a friend who had some experience putting together a pitch deck, which is very helpful to just like get a sense of, all right, this is the audience and that kind of thing. So that going along to Collective, along with Sally's stamp of approval, was enough that Collective was pretty interested from the start. But yes, I think had I not had that pitch deck ready to go, it would have been another series of things. But I am deeply grateful to Collective for them being on board with the vision from the start. Amy, our cookbook editor, and Rachel, the art editor, were excellent to work with, and I had almost complete creative control. It was a lot of, there were a lot of conversations, but the book that we ended up making is pretty much the book of our dreams. Like, we had to compromise almost not at all.
Amazing.
There are a couple very small things text-wise and a couple very small things art-wise, but small enough that I don't think about them at all. They sort of signed on wholesale, which I'm very appreciative of.
That pitch deck, did it have illustrations in it?
It did, by a different illustrator whom we were working with, a friend from college.
Yeah, because we were very curious how that first conversation between Amy and, I'm assuming, the two of you went in terms of her vision, but it sounds like it was like, let's go, let's make this.
Yeah, I had a full draft of the book that I sent over to Amy. So most of the conversation with Collective was just like hashing out contract details with Angela. I pushed for a while because I was a little worried about, like, I'm going to get a bunch of edits that I don't want to deal with. Also, because I was assuming we would be self-publishing, I had sent the whole text to another editor. That editor, Emily, helped a lot with defining the shape of the front matter.
So you hired a developmental editor.
Yeah, not knowing that publishing was even in the cards.
Got it.
That's really interesting.
And then Amy was super helpful. And then I also sent stuff over to a friend who does non-cookbook editing at the very end, just to make sure I got cold feet about, like, is the writing that I think is good, is it good? I can't tell. I trust Amy on all of the things cookbook related, but like wanted to make sure that things that I, since there's a lot of non-cookbook writing that isn't traditionally cookbook in it, I wanted to sort of run that by a friend as well. So yeah, I went through three rounds of editing. Amy was, of course, the biggest chunk of that. When Amy got back to me initially, before we'd signed the contract, she was basically saying that, like, this looks great. There's going to be some stuff that we need to look at, but it's going to be pretty small, which it was. Yeah.
The recipe curation, Jyoti, I'm curious how you decided what recipes were going in. And then also, like, the organization is tricky for a book like this, I think. It's not obvious. So I'm just wondering what that process was like.
We have 99 recipes, of which 96 are what I have taught in my classes. They were appreciated by my students. So it was actually not difficult to choose which ones. There were three, four recipes, I think, ultimately, that we did take out of the collection. And three recipes are by Oyen. Two are cocktails, and Oyen takes credit for 100% cocktails, and a brittle that he made, which is absolutely wonderful. But there are many more that have accumulated since. I have another 500 that we can write about.
I'm so excited. So excited for my mom to find a co-author for those. It's going to be great. It's going to be a wonderful.
Maybe you're going to be teasing book two of this collaboration.
Oh, my word. Please no. I have my cookbook hero is Neelofer Chaporia King.
Yes.
My Bombay Kitchen is incredible, but she got in, she wrote the James Beard Award winning cookbook, and then got out of the business. And I love that as a career model. Yeah. that's very inspiring. The initial batch of recipes my mom sent over were roughly 100. We ended up probably keeping 75 or 80 of those. And then we added more in with an eye to some of those chapters.
Right.
As far as the chapters, it was tricky, but I mean, we ended up sort of putting this into a relatively traditional format where, like, you know, you have the equivalent of appetizers, soup, salads, which are a little bit different because we have a lot of dals, which aren't really that. And we also have a mini essay of this is a micro essay about how Indian meals across most of the subcontinent are served all at once. So these distinctions don't really make a difference. But for me, as long as we sort of describe how these are traditionally presented, I didn't feel like we needed to reinvent the wheel in terms of how we present them, especially given that our hope is that these dishes aren't only eaten and made by people as part of an Indian dinner spread. Like, I love the idea of this being you subbing in one of our vegetables for when you're making a Western meat dish or like a French or Italian, whatever. Same with the desserts or the drinks. And so this idea that presenting it in a more Western context or more traditional Western cookbook context felt like the right way to present them, as long as we include the relevant disclaimers and caveats.
So I have to include, 2-3 years into my teaching, both our younger boys insisted that I should teach fusion. So I had started doing fusion classes. And I realized that my fusion classes wouldn't sell as well as my traditional cooking classes. And so then I tried for about 6 to 8 months. And when I realized that people were not hungry for fusion, they were hungry for traditional cooking, that is when I switched completely to traditional, and no regrets. It has been quite amazing. Do you know how many people I've had through my kitchen?
No, please tell us.
6,500 when I stopped teaching on September 2nd when we started our touring.
Wow. When you see real live home cooks in your kitchen, you see what they're doing. You see what they're getting wrong maybe or misinterpreting. You're also listening to the questions they're asking. You're able to get so much information about how I can make my recipe make sense to somebody who is not as familiar. What are certain lessons that came up for you?
So what I do is a demo. It is not a hands-on because I can have up to 15 people in my kitchen.
Yes.
With a demo. Hands-on, probably it would be 3-4, and it's a lot of work. So I don't generally do hands-on, but yes, they do ask me questions. I do have a friend, she's become a friend now, who has done 98 of my classes. And she's a serious cook.
Wow.
She is 81.
Fantastic. I think it's also just about how food, it's more than just, you know, words on a page in a book somewhere. This is about like bringing people together and forming community. But I am curious too about how you get your recipes written down into this book through this collaboration. I mean, Oyin, were you interviewing your mom to get stories? Was this a lot of telephone conversations or cooking together?
Yeah, recipe testing was, I think, definitely the most violent part of our process.
Tell us about it.
So I mentioned early on in the interview how the first round of recipe testing that I did by myself didn't go very well. And then there was a lot of correspondence course stuff. I'm calling my mom to ask about, like, all right, this didn't go well. This seems to be at odds. And I was coming at it with, I lifetime ago majored in biology and so have a lab oriented, I think, view of recipe testing. As a cook, I'm not interested in measuring things. But from the sort of recipe writing perspective, I'm extremely fastidious about it.
You make us measure salt in this book. Right.
Yeah, I do. I do suggest
you do.
That. Yeah, which like...
That's okay.
Yeah, if it comes out undersalted, it doesn't do the thing. Yeah, totally. But the second round of recipe testing that I did on my own also went a little bit better, but not that great. And then finally, for the third round that my mom and I did together in our home kitchen, and it was exhausting and excruciating at different points. A lot of tears were shed, a lot of yelling, a lot of very mean things said to one another. Like real, real cutting stuff.
Listener, they're both smiling.
Yeah, we are smiling. We're still on speaking terms. I'm very pleased to report. But I kept a newsletter over the course of the past year leading up to this book release. It's Heartland Masala HQ on Substack. And one of those entries is called At Noon We Fight. And it describes how we scheduled in fights to our recipe testing.
You scheduled
in order to
them
get
in?
Through. Effectively, yes.
Amazing.
So we had through 3 weeks of testing. We were testing 3 times a week. We'd start at 10 a.m., do a couple hours of work, have a blowout fight around noon, I'd say. Tears were shed. I was screaming. My mom was crying. Sometimes she screamed too because she knows how to multitask. And then we'd leave the kitchen very upset. And then at 3 p.m., we'd come back together and finish out the day's work. Not feeling great, but feeling fine enough to do it. That's how we did it. But it's just, I'm, again, yeah, very fastidious about measuring things. My mom cared less so about it. That was, I think, probably the source of most of the arguments.
Oyin is a taskmaster without a doubt. So this is a recipe. It didn't make it into the book, but we were recipe testing and it requires the yogurt to be hung. You can't use Greek yogurt. It has to be a thick, plain yogurt. And so it has to be hung overnight. And then you marinate the chicken for about 8 hours or so with various ingredients. And then you roast it in the oven. Before you serve it, you garnish it with these marinated onions and this spice blend called chaat masala. And so everything had been measured and I knew that if I didn't do it, I would be in trouble. So I had measured everything, including the amount of lemon juice I used to marinate the onions. Everything was to task. But the very last step is sprinkling that chaat masala on top of the chicken. I was doing that when Oyin suddenly walks in and he said, did you measure it? And I said, no, it's just a powder. I know 2 tablespoons is what we need and I'm going to do. He said, did you measure it? I said, no. He said, we are going to repeat the recipe. We had to repeat that entire
recipe again.
First you cried.
Would you not cry?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, all in service of the recipe.
Right. All in service of the recipe. When I would insist on certain modes of measurement or like that we needed to be very precise, you can't just write boil 6 eggs. Instead, you're going to boil the water, put the eggs in, time it, put it in an ice bath. When I suggested this to my mom, she looked at me flabbergasted and was like, we are writing a cookbook for idiots.
But none of that comes through. And I have to say, like, we wanted to ask a little bit about the voice and your choice of not using a collective we, but they're two very distinct voices. The recipe procedure voice, and especially Jyoti, your voice in the head notes, is such a calm and encouraging teacher. I've spent years as a cooking teacher, and so I just really, this resonated with me. Anyone can make roti, you know, and even a misshapen roti is going to be tasty. And you're always doing what I think a good teacher does, which is encourage, instruct, stay calm. You know, we're not, because freaking out is not going to help anything, but getting us through to the best result we can. Taking the fear away from it. And, you know, the wonderful thing about frying, and you're like, no, we don't have to be afraid of frying. We're just going to do it, sort of thing.
But that is true. How I am in my classes. It's only with Oyen that, you know, I would lose my patience. I obviously must be doing something right. I don't know what it is that attracts the people into my kitchen, because I do not advertise anywhere. It's a word of mouth. I have no social media presence. I have no website. How people know and come, I don't know. And I feel word of mouth is a very, very strong way of advertising for yourself, because people keep telling me, you make it look so easy, you make it look so easy. I'm sure when I try it. But then I have students who will go try, and then they send me these beautiful pictures of what they have made. That is what keeps me going. And like I've told Oyen, I tell in my classes, Oyen doesn't always agree with me, but I feel food is love. That is my way of sharing my love with my community. There's no better way of giving to your friends and your neighbors and your community the idea of being able to share your cuisine. Every class motivates me to do more. And, you know, I'm not young. I'm 72. It's magical. And I myself sometimes feel, what have I done? I don't know.
Thank you to The Local Palate for supporting this episode. If you're a regular Everything Cookbooks listener, that probably means you really love cookbooks. So I want to tell you about the Local Palate Cookbook Club, a space that celebrates all things cookbooks. They have a digital library of exclusive author interviews, seasonal roundups, reviews, and of course, plenty of recipes. Members receive a weekly newsletter, discounts to their marketplace, access to events, and the chance to win cookbooks and kitchen swag. Membership also makes a great gift for your cookbook-loving friends and families, and there are several membership tiers to choose from. You can find more details by clicking on their link in our show notes. And don't forget to mention that Everything Cookbook sent you.
What blows me away about this book is that I feel that a traditional publisher would have been lucky to have it in their catalog. And I say that because there is a platform there. You have all these people who are clamoring for your recipes. You have this community that, you know, you're booking out months in advance. And also it's this great family story, a mother and the son and the bickering and the storytelling that goes in these pages. I mean, I feel like this is a book that maybe needed the time to have all these layers of complexity in it, because you can put out a collection of recipes, you know, quickly, maybe some basic head notes, not that much storytelling, but there's so many layers to this book. And one of the things that I think really delighted me was these illustrations with the dialogue between both of you, kind of bickering in a good way. Can you just talk a little bit about how you involved the illustrator to help tell the story between both of you? As somebody looking from the outside, I'm not sure how that would work. It's not an obvious thing to say an illustrator, I want you to illustrate this dynamic between a mother and the son.
Totally. Yeah. Thank you so much. Before we move on to that, I wanted to address one of the things Molly had asked about the voices. So my mom gave me freedom to write both of our voices the way I wanted to. And I thought of them almost as characters, where my mom is a character and I'm a character. And my mom's character is pretty easy to write because she's such an encouraging teacher. So it was like, it was based on things that she says in her classes, ways that she described recipes to me. And it was very fun to write. Like there were occasionally things that I would shift from different voices, depending on if something felt a little more relevant to Indian history, then I would shift into my voice, or that occasionally my mom will talk about some of that just to have it be more streamlined. But like the vocabulary that we use doesn't change that much, but the encouraging teacher is definitely my mom. And then I'm the Indian mutt nerd is sort of the way that I thought about splitting them up. But yeah, it was fun to sort of think about that almost as a play, or like that we're two characters in this thing.
And you use humor as well, Oyin, which is really, Kate and I talk a lot about humor and how it's, in many cases, the hardest to do.
Totally.
I laughed out loud. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad it lands. Thanks. What helps the humor land in this book, too, is the illustrations.
Very much.
For me, the illustration was a thing that I wanted to have from the outset. My mom knew that she needed photos in the book, which we included in that 32-page spread in the middle. But for me, it was very important that the primary visual language was illustration.
Why was that?
Yeah, a few reasons. One was having me and my mom as characters felt important from the start, to have us have two different voices so that we could also interact. I think there's the actual interaction and also the meta understanding that there are different perspectives one can have on the same food, even within the same family. Sure. And with something as broad as Indian food, that felt important. Also, a lot of inspiration taken from Wendy McNaughton's excellent work in Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, where the humor, the lightness helps with that. Like, there's a lot of text in that book and it feels very light and easy to pick up and accessible. And I think the illustration has a lot to do with that. For our book, where that we were going to have verging potentially on overly academic, to have a way of demonstrating to the reader that we take ourselves seriously, but not that seriously. Having the illustration is important there. Also, I think illustration does a way better job than photography a lot of the time in demonstrating instructions. Having that be part of the language was important. But as far as how we got to the illustrator, so the illustrations were baked into the premise of the book from the outset for me. So I had in my mind sketches of all these things done. And so when I sent, I'll send you all the illustration spreadsheet that I sent to Olivier, because when we hired him, I had to send him a sense of what we were going to be asking him for. And that was a huge undertaking to sort of think about where we're going to need these bits. I also will send over the original pitch deck we sent, because I think you might enjoy that given the Amazing. Difference in illustrations and stuff. And in that pitch deck, the first one, I was a child. It was me as a kid and my mom as an adult. But it soon became clear that me as a kid was going to be way too precocious of a child to be able to make that make any sense. Yeah, so for the dialogue ones, I sent Olivier a bad version of like where I envisioned us on the page and how I would see the dialogue bubbles coming in. And he made those real and took some liberties in them, but stayed pretty true to the initial vision, I think, in most cases. The short answer to how the illustrations came about was that I had a plan for them, and then they were executed in better than I had dreamed by Olivia.
Amazing. And I'm assuming when you sent him the spreadsheet of what you wanted, that's when you got a price from him of what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you mentioned the 32-page insert, because, you know, I've been around long enough that inserts used to be whatever, you know, if you got four color, it was in an insert, you know, and now it's four color throughout. So, but your choice to do the insert, we were talking about how it really serves this book, because if the photos were interspersed, I can't imagine it.
Yeah.
It doesn't interrupt the illustrative narrative, but it also, because you've photographed almost all the recipes in the book, I think. I mean, there's like 100 dishes, I think.
I think maybe a few of the scratch recipes aren't explicitly included, but
you make the point throughout is how so many of these dishes are meant to be served all at once. That's the way an Indian meal is. It just, there's lots of dishes on the table. So you message that through the photographs as well. Whereas if they were individual kind of beauty shots of individual dishes and recipes, it wouldn't really communicate what you needed to do. And I'm also thinking financially, having a 32-page insert probably costs less than having them throughout. I don't know.
So I think most photographers charge by day.
Okay.
I'm sure people do different things. And I have seen a precious few books where I've seen illustration and photography on the same spread and they don't take away from one another. But I think in general, they clash in a way that's difficult.
Fight, yeah.
Unless it's planned very specifically, and our timelines for photography and illustration were wildly different. So photography timeline was 9 days. My mom ran the kitchen and was a champ, truly. I let her fill you in on that.
Jyoti, I want to hear how that you did that. Yeah.
After I spreadsheeted the plan. And then illustration was several months of back and forth with Olivier, wherein every month or so I'd receive this Christmas morning of just new illustrations, which were such a pleasure.
Amazing.
So given that they were going to be on different timelines when we couldn't plan it out in that way, having them be isolated. And that was just something that I had to discuss with the publisher a bit, but there was not a lot of pushback. And this is, as you pointed out, not a standard move for cookbooks now, but we're really pleased with how it came out. And we also planned the photo shoot knowing that that was going to be the spread. So almost like a photo library, which I think had we not planned it out that way, it might have risked being a little overwhelming to have that many photos in a row. But to have the vision be a photo index, our team also, Kevin Miyazaki is a lovely human being and extremely good photographer. So having all of that information at the start helped with our ability to plan how the thing would play out.
Each photo page then has captions that tell you what recipes are being sort of displayed on that page. So it makes it easy to see. Also, you know, give you ideas of like, oh, you could make all three of these and they would fit together really nicely.
There is a map that did not make it into the book. And I think it's an interesting issue to talk about. So I'll let you tell the story.
The very first illustration our illustrator did was this map. And we were very excited about it. It is a non-comprehensive guide map to South Asia. So it only references the states and regions that we reference in the book. So a lot of parts are missing. I was very excited about it. And then it became clear that we would not be allowed to include it in the book because it's a map of India. And it includes the top border of India, which is disputed between China, India, and Pakistan. We indicate that those borders are disputed on the map. Olivier did so with pink ovals and a little lightning bolt, which I think was very charming. But our Chinese printer said, you'll need to remove the top part of India if you want to have this map in the book, which the top list didn't feel like the right look for us. So we decided to keep it intact. And there's a print your own map also on the Substack. It's an 8x10 PDF that if you send to your own print shop, you can print on glossy or matte as you wish and slip it into the book. It will not be printed in China as the rest of the book is. And for that reason, it gets to be whole. So I love that map and I'm bummed that it didn't make it into the book, but it has been a fun thing to talk about. And yeah, the geopolitics playing a role in how a cookbook is printed, of course, makes a lot of sense. Everything is interconnected, but it was definitely a surprise for us.
And I love that the generosity of putting it out there anyway and saying, you know, it still can be a part of the book.
Jyoti, I know doing a photo shoot is an immense amount of work and you did it at home. Tell us about that process.
Well, I definitely was relieved when it was over. It was exciting because we had, of course, never done something like this. But I was a little nervous too because 100 recipes in 9 days is a lot of cooking. Fortunately, Oyen and I had made out our little schedule as to what we were going to do on day one, day two, day three. So that made it a little easier. And I had already done all my grocery shopping, though my husband was always on standby to go pick up Oyen at times. We had the art director staying at our house. Food stylist and prop artist were local. And of course, our wonderful photographer was from Milwaukee. Everybody was eating at our place because I would be up at 6:30 every morning. Our first shoot generally would be around 9:30-ish. And so I had to have my two or three dishes ready for the photo shoot. And then while they would be shooting, I would already be on the second installment of cooking. And then we would break for lunch. And that lunch would be our morning and late morning dishes that I had made. And it was so amazing because these were all people who had Indian food, but they came out with, I have never eaten so much Indian food in my life. They enjoyed it so much. And then in the afternoon shift, can you imagine after you've eaten, then you sit down and cook again. And that was the hardest was the afternoon shift. But we did it and everybody would take the leftovers home for their families so that we never were stuck with a whole lot of food. And our food stylist was so happy that I was doing the cooking because apparently I didn't know that it is the food stylist who does all the cooking and the authors sit and watch. Trina was just a doll. She was so relieved when I told her, I'll do the cooking. And we knew we had a deadline because our photographer was here only for that many days. It was probably the most rewarding teamwork that I have ever done. It was just so lovely. Everybody was so nice. It went very smoothly. And on the 10th day, Kevin took a few pictures of Oyen and I together as mother and son. And when he sent me the picture, I realized, wow, this doesn't look like me at all. I was exhausted.
Oh,
I was
of course.
So tired. I was looking so exhausted.
Oh, I know that.
I did not know it till I saw those pictures, how tired I was.
Yep.
It did take me several days to recuperate. My blood pressure medication too had to be changed after it was all done. But it was a lovely time. for sure.
Wow. We need to wrap up because we've taken so much of your time, but I do want to just quickly talk about the cover, because I know even though you had a lot of control over the inside and the content of the book, when it comes to the cover, as most authors know, that's a marketing decision. And I'm imagining as Simon Schuster is involved with distribution, they're also involved with the marketing.
Yeah, totally.
So how'd you get this bright orange cover with the mango on it?
I had been prepped from the start by our team that the cover was going to be a point of conversation. I also did not have a vision for it. It's one of the, maybe the only part of the book that I did not have a pretty solid idea of what I wanted it to look like.
Interesting.
And we'd also hired a designer, Laura Palese. The way that we did the design for the book is that Laura did the architecture, but Rachel, our art director, filled everything in. So it was sort of a way to cut some costs, but still work with a designer whom we were really excited to work with. Laura, Olivier, Rachel, our art director, and I were all collaborating and thinking about different things. I had expressed that I really wanted an illustrated cover, and I had been told in under no uncertain terms that in the US, that is a harder sell for marketing teams, so much so that British cookbooks that have an illustrated cover will get a photographed makeover for the US market, because the marketing teams in the US assume everyone in the US wants photographs, I guess, on the cover, or that's what sells, or whatever it is. That's what I've been told. So I knew that there was a chance that we would not get to have an illustrated cover. But since we had excellent photos with Kevin, it was never that much of a disappointment because it had been introduced as a possibility so early on. That was the most back and forth we had on any one decision or any series of decisions, was on the cover, coming up with things that felt good to me, Olivier, Rachel, sending that over to Simon and Schuster, getting their thoughts and sort of rejiggering. But I'm really pleased with where we landed. I love the color. I think the mango does the thing I want it to do. And that very goofy elephant drawn.
Tell us about that.
So there's a large mango, Heartland Masala, and then Olivier's handwriting beneath it, American cookbook from an Indian kitchen, my mom and my names. And then a very small but very present illustration of an elephant pulling a covered wagon. The way that came about was our German illustrator, who's based in London, was like, I Googled the Midwest and I found this wagon and I think of elephants also. So I'm just going to roll with it. Which elephant do you like? And that was it. It was just him. There are many, many terrible things about the internet and stereotyping things, but this is one of my favorite results of that whole process. It was just beautiful.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Thank you.
We'll say too, just the quality of the print work, the binding, everything is so immensely polished. I think everyone should just take a look at this book and see the design and see how it interplays so well with the recipes in it. I'm very curious about whether there are recipes in this book that are the favorites of the classes you teach. Which are the ones that we should definitely not miss?
Butter chicken is one of them. I do this once a year just because it is such a hot item in my classes. I give 3 dates for the butter chicken class. You will not believe in 24 to 72 hours, I'm sold out. I have to add new dates for those who procrastinated. It is also made without any cream. So that is a big, big factor. And you will see, apart from 2 desserts, we have no cream in our dishes at all, because that's not how normally Indian food is cooked. So that is one of my biggest sellouts.
From recipe testing, some things that people really, really liked. The Brussels sprouts, masala Brussels sprouts, and that includes amchur. Having a dry acid is such a helpful thing.
Amazing,
both
yeah.
Inside and outside of Indian cuisine. There's a dish called ghugni that's a chickpea dish that was very popular with khichdi too. That's another one.
We will put links to most definitely your Substack, the Heartland Masala HQ Substack, because there's so much there, especially for listeners of this podcast about how the book got made, a lot more backstory than we were able to cover here. But I'm curious, Jyoti, about your classes. If you don't have a website, how do people sign up for your classes?
I have an email listserv of people who come to my classes, and I do have a sign-in book. So once when they come in, they will sign their name and their email address. They get my email and they will forward it to their friends and their friends forward it to their friends.
Word of mouth.
Yes.
Are you willing to share your email on the podcast if people are interested in coming?
Sure. Yeah.
That is going to be just jmukherjee@gmail.com. We'll go directly to my mother. Please don't put it on any shoe advertisement websites.
Right.
Amazing.
Do you have ambitions to write other kinds of books?
Yeah, it's certainly a thing that I think about. I do feel like I get to scratch the itch through songwriting. Mm. But yeah, I'd love to make more. I don't think of cookbook writing and songwriting as different careers. It just feels like kind of the same mess of stuff where I'm getting to hang out with people I love and make things. But yeah, I hope to do more writing in some capacity down the road. I loved writing the Substack. That was a really fun process. And I got a piece of advice from another writer, which was have it be a limited time, which was really helpful for me. Like, I knew that I was starting in January. I'm still doing like occasional follow-ups, but it ended at the release date, which was really nice. And that allowed me to stay focused, stay on track, and not get burned out too, which was beautiful. I think I will start to do more writing at some point. I have fantasies of going to India and roaming around for 3 months just eating things. And so maybe that'll be an excuse. But it's really nice right now to not be thinking about like what the next project is going to be. I'm very grateful that I also have no golden handcuffs with anything I'm doing. Nothing I'm doing makes very much money. So there's nothing keeping me in the business, which is great. So it's a freedom, truly. Yeah, I hope to do more writing, but not sure what it'll look like and feeling very grateful that I don't know.
I just want to add that the best co-author anybody could ask for in the world.
A really special collaboration.
Thanks, Shmuel.
That's beautiful. Wonderful to speak with you, and good luck on the rest of the tour. We'll be watching to see what you're both up to next.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Everything Cookbooks. For more about each episode, subscribe to our newsletter at everythingcookbooks.substack.com. Here are some other ways to support the show. Go to everythingcookbooks.com and check out our totes, t-shirts, sweatshirts, and other merch. Buy us a round of coffee. You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That really helps. Thank you, as always, to our editor, Abby Circatella. Until next time, keep on writing, reading, and cooking.